Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow me at Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports. The 110 Nation fan page, the 110 Nation Sports. Glad to be back in the studio on this Tuesday night. Make sure that you guys check out Race Chat live every Monday night right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And then don't forget Thursday nights, the Southern Dirt Track Report, also at 8 o'clock right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. Got to say, not a bad weekend. My NFL picks turned out pretty well. As a matter of fact, I don't think there was too many losses at all. Got to go back through and see how I did finally finish. Wrote them down this week so I know what I'm looking at this week. Got a lot of things to jump into tonight. So make sure that you guys hang around. Got a lot of things. From Urban Meyer to the Baltimore Ravens, Cincinnati-Jacksonville Thursday night game. Oh, my Lord, I'm tired of hearing about the Dallas Cowboys. Brady Belichick. The Tony Rule, and then a little bit of NFL, or a little bit of NASCAR, and got my NFL picks. So without any further delay, let's jump into some of this stuff going on in the sporting world this evening. Let's go ahead and hit the nail on the head and jump into the first topic. Let's jump into this whole Urban Meyer thing. Good Lord, have mercy. Jacksonville has enough to really to have on their plate already versus worrying about who he has rubbing up on him, dancing up on him, lap dancing, whatever you want to call that, whatever, in that video. You're the worst team in the NFL for now two seasons. There's a reason why you had the number one draft pick. Still uncertain why you wasted the number one draft pick on probably what is the most overrated quarterback in all of college football. But he's lost more games in the NFL than he lost in his total high school and college career. In the regular season, big whoop-de-doo. Playing the ACC. You lost games playing in the ACC, especially playing for Clemson, then you probably don't deserve to be in the NFL anyway. But anyway, that's a whole other topic for a whole other issue. But this whole Urban Meyer thing, it's funny to me. It's kind of insane to me at the same time. You have video of Urban Meyer standing there leaning against the barstool, whatever it was, and some woman basically dancing up against him. It's not like you got video of Urban Meyer going back to a hotel. It's not that you have video of Urban Meyer having sexual relations with a female. Hell, it's not even like you got video of Urban Meyer even kissing another woman. You simply got Urban Meyer in a bar in Columbus with a female in front of him dancing up on him. Granted, that was a little more than should be for a married man. But at the end of the day, he's at a bar. Has a woman up against him. Dancing. Not like she has got her ass all up against him grinding hard, but just up against him dancing. To make this be this whole spectacle that it is now turned into is crazy insane to me, because at the end of the day, that is between him and his wife. For all these people to judge, first of all, if it be in morale, against morals, if it be against people's beliefs, whatever the case, everybody believes different. And it's funny because I've had this conversation with people before. I believe what I believe when it comes to heterosexual, homosexual, that whole topic, being someone that's grown up in the church. But I've also, regardless of my belief, don't judge and don't discriminate on what I believe and don't believe. Because at the end of the day, regardless if I believe what somebody is doing is a sin or not a sin, I know what I have done behind closed doors. I know what I have done in the first 43 years of my life before I was married. I also believe that having sex outside of wedlock is a sin. So how am I going to judge others on what they do with who they do when I have not led a Christ-like life? In other words, I've not led a perfect life. So to hear all these people have their two cents, even though, you know, you got Joe, Bob, and Mike down at the local bar running their mouth while Mike's got a side piece. Joe has cheated on his girlfriend in the past. And Bob is stolen more than once from a gas station. Like, for all these people to throw their two cents in and talk about, I can't believe he did this to his wife and everything else. And granted, being especially a freshly married man, like I said, what he did, not cool. But for me to judge what he has done or not done, the fact that the only thing that video showed was him allowing a female to dance up on him, that, like I said, once again, it shouldn't happen. But that's to the whole point. You got all these people, because people already got their thought, their judgment, their opinion of Urban Meyer. This just kind of pushes you in that direction that you already have of Urban Meyer. If you already have respect for Urban Meyer or like Urban Meyer, then this changes nothing. If you already don't like Urban Meyer or have no respect for Urban Meyer, this changes nothing. It just pushes you more into that direction. At the end of the day, it affects my life no way, no shape, no form. I could care less if a video came out tomorrow that she was hanging from the ceiling fan and he was in whips and chains and leather. So I could really care less. It's none of my business. At the end of the day, it does not change my opinion of the Jacksonville Jaguars. It doesn't change my opinion of the overrated quarterback that they have instead of going with the quarterback they had. Not that either one, Minshew, was that much better, but it was still an upgrade to what you have right now. But to hear these different reports, the team has lost confidence in the coach. The team is this and the team is that. How has that changed your confidence in what the coach is doing on the field? What he does on a Thursday night in a bar in Columbus has nothing to do with what was going on in that field that they almost beat Cincinnati on Thursday night earlier in that night. It has nothing to do with next Saturday night or next Sunday when they suit up to lose their next football game. It has nothing to do with the previous three losses or the previous, what we had, 19 straight losses since going 1-0 back to last year and then losing every game pretty much since then. It's funny to me how this ultimately non-story has turned really into this crazy, humongous story that at the end of the day does not reflect, does not change the day-to-day operations of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And for these so many people to be so consumed in somebody's personal life, and at the end of the day, this is between him, his wife, I think Shelley's her name, and God. Everybody else's thoughts, opinions, comments, at the end of the day, is really meaningless, has no point to it. And it's insane because the only difference between Urban Meyer and I would say at least half of the NFL is Urban Meyer's business was put out there. The rest of them have managed just to keep their business on the DL. And like I said, once again, all the video showed was a little closer than too close for comfort dancing. Like I said, it wasn't like she was twerking. It wasn't like she was bumping and grinding. It wasn't like she was stripping. It wasn't nothing. No kissing, no groping, no sex, no nothing. Just simply some dancing. Some white girl dancing at that. So for this to be such a thing, here we are 3 days, 4 days later, almost a week later, is beyond me how this story has managed to carry so much steam that we're going into almost a week later still talking about Urban Meyer at a bar in Columbus. Baltimore Ravens. This is another story out there that at the end of the day cracks me up because it's petty. It makes no sense to me. The Baltimore Ravens are up 23-7 with a few seconds left on the clock and have an opportunity to basically continue their streak of 100-yard rushing games to tie or to pass the Pittsburgh Steelers. A team that has become a big rivalry in the AFC North. We've gotten to the point that the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers just despise each other. There is no love lost between these two teams at all. If there was a game that I'm going to watch that involves the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens, it's going to be this game. Once or even twice. No matter how sorry one team is and how good the other team is, no matter how good both teams are, no matter how sorry both teams are, this is going to be an intense, chippy rivalry game. So, of course, this record means something to the Baltimore Ravens. This is kind of an opportunity to continue this beef between these two teams, an opportunity to take the Pittsburgh Steelers off the record books on something, and just kind of an opportunity to be one up on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, it seems that the Denver Broncos and the head coach did not find too fond of this. Was not too thrilled of the fact that they just didn't go into victory formation and end the game, that they went ahead and ran a play that they knew that they were running a play. It was obvious. It wasn't like they just surprised them. And end up getting their 100-yard game and continuing their streak. We all know, one, that I despise 31 teams. I have love for my Cleveland Browns. Anything outside of that, I don't like. Some teams, granted, I have a dislike more than others. Baltimore, of course, being, you know, the former Browns is one of those teams that I have a little more despise or hatred towards versus other teams, but this is one of those moments that, and very few moments, that I actually don't have an issue with the Baltimore Ravens. I don't have an issue with what they did. And a couple things. This is just like the whole running up the scoreboard. Ultimately, at the end of the day, for those that bitch, moan, and cry, that, oh, they ran the score. It's the fourth quarter, and they're already up 28-0, and they instead of just going to victory formation, they kicked a field goal where they scored another touchdown. One, at the end of the day, you're asking a team to not be competitive to save your humility. You know, if your team played defense like it's supposed to and you play like professionals, the score wouldn't have been ran up. Or, in this instance, Baltimore wouldn't have felt that they or was that close to where they needed to run on one more play, a running play, to continue their streak, to continue this record. But two, if this was such an issue to the Broncos organization, you know how you solve that? You stop Lamar Jackson. You stop the running back. You don't even let them get to an opportunity that they feel that, oh, all I got to do is run 3 more yards and we can continue our streak. Or even more so on that particular play, which you knew they were running. You knew what the objective was in that entire play. All you had to do was stop him. All you had to do was hit him in the backfield. If you had pushed him back another 2 yards, 5 yards, whatever, they would have probably, odds are, just chalked it up and that would have been the end of the streak. The record went, it continued on. But not only did you allow the Baltimore Ravens to be in a position where they only needed to pick 3 more yards up to continue this record, you allowed them to get the 3 yards. I think they got 5 yards on the play, and Lamar Jackson slid. It wasn't like he had to go through and get hit and everything else. He was able to slide and be down without even contact. But you allowed the Baltimore Ravens to get the yards on a play you knew was coming. It wasn't like all of a sudden they're just going to pass the ball. You knew they were running the ball. Like I said, there's not a lot of things that the Baltimore Ravens do that I'll ever approve of or not have an issue with. This is one of them that I don't have an issue with. If Denver had an issue with them up 23-7 running to continue a streak, to continue a record, then Denver should have manned up and either A, not allow Baltimore to even be in the ballpark of be able to get this, or B, on this particular play, which they knew it was a running play, should have stopped them. But not only for personal reasons did the Baltimore Ravens do this to continue this record, to one up on the Pittsburgh Steelers, to continue to try to be the best in their division and just one up the Steelers. But too far, you know, some of these players, their pay depends on this. Their bonuses, they can get a substantial amount of bonus if they reach certain accomplishments throughout the season. So you want, for argument's sake, I don't know if there was any stipulations what Lamar Jackson needs to accomplish this year to even increase a bonus opportunity. But just for hypotheticals, are you saying that you don't want Lamar Jackson to pick up that 3 yards to put him in a bracket that potentially can make him millions of dollars just because your butt hurt on a game that you're losing by more than 2 touchdowns and on a running play that you knew was happening before they snapped the ball and your defense is just too sorry to do anything about? I mean, that's kind of the gist of what I'm getting. Oh, a couple teams that are sticking their chest out loud and proud this weekend and after this weekend, and I'm really honestly tired of hearing about. Being from the great state of Ohio, I've had to hear a lot of Cincinnati fans. Oh, Cincinnati this. Oh, Cincinnati that. First of all, you're tied with Cleveland and Baltimore. Cincinnati nothing at this point. But more so after this weekend and proud on a primetime game that you beat who? You beat the team that is the worst team the last 2 years. You beat the Jacksonville Jaguars in a game that shouldn't have been as close as it was. For all these people walking around the great state of Ohio beating on their chest and proud of their Cincinnati Bengals, you do realize you only won 24-21 in a close game against what is the worst team in the NFL. Having the number one draft pick, drafting Trevor Lawrence is just proof in the pudding that there is the worst team in the NFL. This is not just Mr. CJ Sports saying the Jacksonville Jaguars are the worst team in the NFL. They had the number one draft pick because they were the worst team in the NFL last year. And now here we are 0-4 into this season. Dallas Cowboys, another team that is beating their chest after this weekend. And it's the insanity of all this. Lord have mercy, the insanity that all of a sudden, because they beat the Carolina Panthers, the Carolina Panthers team that first 3 games they played nobody. They beat teams that even win games. You have the two categories, contenders and pretenders. And outside of Carolina fans, delusional Carolina fans at that, nobody had Carolina outside of the pretenders category. Nobody actually had them as legit contenders. That's all, like all these stats of Sam Darnold this and Sam Darnold that. Just when you start off the season playing nobody, when you beat teams that have a combined of 0 wins, it's easy to have stats that are better than your previous years when you had to play, even just in your division alone, the New England Patriots, the Buffalo Bills, who was, what, a game short of going to the Super Bowl, and the Miami Dolphins, who's been in the middle of the pack, just in your division alone. Not to mention the rest of the schedule. Then you come to play in Carolina, and no fault to Carolina. And people get this. I've seen this argument so many times. Oh, this team has such an easy schedule. You do realize it's a rotating schedule. The NFL just has a rotating schedule. Everybody plays the same schedule in rotation. And you just get lucky in certain years, just like when Carolina went to the Super Bowl. They got lucky. They played nobody. I think the one team that had a win, you know, two teams that had a winning record all year. They beat Arizona in the NFC Championship game, and then they lost the Super Bowl. I think outside of that, I don't think they played anybody else with a winning record all year long. Sometimes it plays out like that. Ain't no fault to nobody. I just how the cookie crumbles sometimes. But these people to be sold up on Carolina, who played absolutely positively nothing up to this point, and then had to hear about Carolina this and Carolina that was crazy. I mean, you played at the time, it was an 0-3 Jets or 0-2 Jets. Houston, one of the worst teams in the AFC. And then you beat a Saints team. Ooh. Jameis Winston looked good in that first week, but after that first week, it has gone downhill for Jameis Winston. So you played a Jets team that had won a game, a Saints team that I think had one win. I think they won that first week and then fell apart after that, and a Houston team. Three of probably the worst teams in the NFL right now. Didn't play nobody. Go against the Cowboys, and you play them close, 36-28. But don't tell Cowboys fans that. Cowboys coming off that win to the Philadelphia Eagles, which was nobody. And then now coming off this Carolina Panther win, you would have thought that the Chargers had done won the Super Bowl already. Now we're hearing Dak Prescott MVP conversations. We're hearing Dallas Cowboys going to the Super Bowl conversations. How about we pump the brakes? I mean, granted, you beat a good Charger team, but outside of that, the only other legitimate team you played against was Tampa Bay, and you lost. So let's pump the brakes for a few. Let's put this all into perspective, because at the end of the day, you match up against Tampa Bay. I don't think you beat Tampa Bay again. You lost it the first time. I think the playoff starts tomorrow. I got my money on Tampa Bay. I also have my money on Arizona. I have my money on Green Bay. There's some teams in the NFC that I don't see Dallas getting by at this point. NFC-wise, I give Green Bay or Dallas your top five. NFL, you're probably top 10. But Dak Prescott is not MVP. And he should be labeled as probably the comeback player of the year. He's not the best quarterback in the NFL. Therefore, he can't be the most valuable player. He's not. Yeah, Kyler Murray playing off the chain. Aaron Rodgers, you get past week one and whatever that was. And some of y'all, that would be like me going off the deep end with another Cleveland Browns win. Oh, we 3-1. We Super Bowl bound. Baker Mayfield should be in the conversation of MVP. I mean, we're on a 3-1 team. Yeah, I'm saying that with sound. Like I said last week, and I've told people all week this week, I'm more impressed with our loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm more impressed how we played in the one loss we had. Because if we wouldn't have botched a punt, we could be sitting at 4-0 and have beat a legitimate team. But Kansas City's 2-2. I told you, first of all, they would win. Everybody hitting that panic button about the Kansas City Chiefs. I told you they'd be in the mix of everything. Now you got a 3-1 Charger team, a 3-1 Oakland Raider team, a 3-1 Denver Bronco team. I told you they would come back to Kansas City. Kansas City's hitting 2-2, just chuckling. Like, you do realize all it takes is a week or two of action, and we're going to be sitting with a a four-way tie here in the AFC West, and the real contender is going to jump ahead of the pretenders out in the West. Oh, Lord. Brady and Belichick. God, that was – I'm glad that's over with. You know what's insane? There's a lot of people out there that felt that Belichick won this matchup because Tom Brady didn't have the best game of his career. First of all, I'll tip my hat to Tom Brady. He's like one of three quarterbacks to beat every team in the NFL. I had a brain fart there for a minute. I was like, wow, Patriots were the last team that they actually beat? That he actually beat? Then, oh, duh. This is the first and only time you played the Patriots in your 20-something years. So I had to rewind that one for a second. I don't care how you spin this. I don't care if he would have thrown for 100 yards. I don't care if he would have thrown for 5 interceptions. The only way that you could feel that Bill Belichick won this matchup, that you could be confident that Tom Brady did not get the upper hand in this whole matchup, is if at the end of the day it would have said New England, so-and-so many points, Tampa Bay, lesser so-and-so points. That's the only way that Tom Brady loses to Bill Belichick, regardless statistically what he put on there. The fact that he threw for no touchdowns, only threw for 200 yards, had a passing rating of 70 or whatever it was. Because at the end of the day, we know what impact as a leader Tom Brady has on the organization, any organization he plays for, but more so what he has done and the role he has taken on at Tampa Bay. Getting not only the offensive players to see the game at a different speed and understand and dissect it better, but help defensively get this team in a position to understand things better and help guide and be a better leader and bring this team together. So listening to this game show, this talk show, and listening to that talk show, and listening to this person talk, listening to that person talk, and I'm listening to these people talk about Tampa Bay Buccaneers might have won the game, but Bill Belichick won the Brady-Belichick battle. How is that even mathematically possible? Tom Brady is 1-0 against Bill Belichick. 1-0. There could be no other way to spin that. At the end of the day, it's a team game. It's a team sport. And congratulations to Tom Brady. Most passing yards. Passes Drew Brees. early into the Sunday night game. Another big topic is taunting. As a taunting call was called on the Las Vegas Raiders last night, hurting momentum and hurting things. I think I heard something like there's already 14 taunting calls, penalties in the first 4 weeks versus three at this point last year. This is what I'll say about the taunting, and then we'll jump into my picks, and then we'll get into a couple of things real quick, get things wrapped up tonight. I've never been a fan of the whole showboating, the whole spectacle, also known as taunting, when it comes to players in the NFL. The whole pulling out the phone, the pen and sign on the football, or the whole standing in the middle of Dallas Stadium as a star, the whole cell phone, act like you had a cell phone, the whole defense run into the end and because they make a play is beyond ridiculous. But it's part of the game. The issue that I have with the whole taunting call is it becomes a judgment call. It becomes to the referee's discretion. It becomes bias. Now you're asking officials to have an unbiased approach, and regardless what any ref tells you, every ref, I'm sure, has a hometown team, a favorite team, a team they want to see win. Regardless if they ever officiate those teams or not, doesn't mean that they don't have a dislike for other teams. Doesn't mean that over the years a team is not rubbed in the wrong way, a player is not rubbed in the wrong way. And so now you're asking human officials to not allow human thoughts, emotions, or bias play a factor into they feel if a player is taunting. And to what extent is taunting? I agree with Colin Cowherd, and I'm not big on the fact that the Las Vegas player spiked the football, and I wouldn't really call it a spike, but he, end of the day, spiked the football to an extent on the Charger sideline. And that's what ultimately drew the taunting call. It wasn't in a fashion of in your face. It wasn't in the fashion of trying to cause a fight or anything to that nature. And it's big, and to me, it's kind of at the same time disrespectful to do it on someone else's sideline. I don't feel that it was a taunting call worthy action. If he would have grunk spiked the ball, I can understand. Simply just basically throw the ball down after making a big catch in a critical time of the game. Not so much an issue with it. I have more of an issue of a defensive player getting up and doing some kind of celebration when they sack a quarterback when their team's down by 50 points than I did with that. Actually, that kind of chaps my ass when I see players do that. Like, you're down by three touchdowns. your measly sack with 2 minutes left in the game really is not changing anything. So you flexing, taunting, whatever you got going on because you sacked a quarterback in meaningless minutes in a game that you got your ass handed to you the entire other 55 minutes of the game or 57 minutes of the game is beyond ridiculous to me. I know that the NFL goes through phases and makes rules and changes rules and everything else. I hope two things. And then we'll get into these picks. One, for the life of me, I hope that this whole taunting rule and penalty does not dictate term or determine the outcome of crowning and who lives the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the season. Would be nothing worse than knowing that an official's biased opinion on what is taunting or unbiased or whatever opinion is of what a taunt is and not dictates who ends up winning the championship this year would be very devastating. Two, ultimately, I hope that the NFL decides to change this rule before the end of the season versus letting the season play out. Even if they don't change the rule, if Roger Goodell comes out and says, look, this is out of hand. We already got 14 taunting calls in the first 4 weeks. Let's loosen the reins up on this and let's make this rule apply to those that go out of their way and basically try to provoke some kind of reaction or fight or something to that nature versus simply what the Las Vegas player did and just basically threw the ball to the ground after making a play, not at anybody, not to the extreme of a grunt slam, basically just threw the ball down. I'm more of a traditionalist. I have the utmost respect for Barry Sanders. After he scored his touchdown, he had run over and ran the ball to the ref, and that was the end of it. That is my all-time most favorite celebration, the Barry Sanders celebration. But I would hate to see the NFL season and the champion or championship come down to or be dictated by an official's opinion or feelings on what is a taunting call and not. Let's get into our picks for this week. We roll into week 5 of the NFL season, and we've kind of gotten a foundation on where things are, what who is what and what is where in the NFL. Now we kind of get a – now things start to flow a little bit better and picks. And so far, I missed the last 2 weeks of the NFL. So the first 2 weeks, one of the weeks I was down to the Monday night game. So I've been in the first week. I wasn't far off. And like I said, last week I wasn't in the NFL pool, but I got most of my picks. If I had been in, I probably would have been in the running for the football pool. So hopefully this week, get back into the football pool. Hopefully that means we'll get a W and pull in some cash. Let's go through these picks. Thursday night game, we got the Los Angeles Rams rolling into Seattle. Rams coming off of their loss. Seattle coming off their win. I know a lot of people are sold on the Rams and feel that Seattle is not quite there. I agree and disagree. I feel that the Rams are a great team, but defensively they're not the same defensive team that we've seen. They are allowing a lot more yards and a lot more points than we've ever seen under Sean McVay. And Seattle, it's taking a minute to get things clicking, but I think that you get past the off season and the uncertainties of Russell Wilson, I think things are starting to roll forward, and Seattle's starting to find their way. They find their way at home this weekend. I am taking the Seattle Seahawks at home Thursday night, primetime game. I'm taking Seattle to do it. I'm taking the 12th man. I just can't see Seattle not locking things up with the Los Angeles Rams and getting themselves in a position, already down two games to Arizona in this division. Now you're kind of getting into panic mode. And I know we're only four games into, we're only a quarter into the season, but you're already two games behind Arizona, who's an extremely hot team. So now you can't find yourself falling back any farther. Hopes that Arizona has a couple blips in their season to pull them back in, because now you're relying on a wild card. You're relying on Carolina to either stumble and Seattle continue to stumble. You're hoping on that nobody in the NFC North gains momentum, and because Green Bay is obviously going to take the NFC North. So now you're hoping that Detroit, Minnesota, and Chicago continue and don't catch fire. You're hoping that the same thing happens in the South with the Saints, Atlanta, and Saints, Atlanta. Because you already know that Tampa Bay and Carolina are one who's going to win your division. The other one's probably going to get your wild card. I was drawing a blank with Tampa Bay. I don't know why. And so Seattle can't fall any farther behind, because you also got to worry about the 49ers. You also got to worry about the Los Angeles Rams. So you can't find yourself letting yourself getting further and further behind Arizona, because at that point you're also getting behind the Rams, you're getting behind the 49ers, you're getting behind Tampa Bay, behind Carolina, behind Dallas. So this, I'm not going to say this is a must-win, but this is an important game. This is a game to keep you within reach of the Arizona Cardinals, so you don't find yourself falling and having to find yourself relying on a wild card spot. Next game I have on this list, the Green Bay Packers travel to Cincinnati. Cincinnati has not really beat anybody. You struggled against Jacksonville, beating your chest off that. Green Bay, ever since that week one, what the hell was that moment? Green Bay has been clicking on all cylinders. Green Bay rolls into Cincinnati, knocks Cincinnati off the high horse, sending him down 3-2, and Green Bay taking a strong hold of the NFC North on their way to taking that division. Next on the list is the Denver Broncos at Pittsburgh. I think this is it of Big Ben. I think that this season things continue to unravel. Things start to we start to see the Pittsburgh Steelers look to go into a different direction, start to look at life after Big Ben. They should have parted their ways, and they should have went in a different direction going into the season. But now here we are, week four, Steelers 1-3, Denver 3-1. We got to see Denver fall apart against Baltimore. I see Denver going into Pittsburgh and continuing their winning ways. Denver is the better of the two teams. I see Denver taking this one. Next one on the list is Washington, home against the New Orleans Saints, both of these teams 2-2. I've never been a fan of Jameis Winston. I feel that that was another one of those overhyped, overrated situations. The year he won his national championship, first of all, you played in the ACC. So you really played nobody, and then your combined opponents were 81-81. So not only did you play in the ACC, you played a schedule that allowed you not even to play winning team schedule. Then you went up against an Auburn team that wasn't even the best team. They just happened to have that miraculous return, that field goal return. And so you lined up to not play the best team in the entire college football on the way to win a championship that has proven once again that an overrated quarterback cannot succeed in the NFL, as Jameis Winston has proven that over and over. Washington defense much better than what it has put up so far. I have Washington at home over the New Orleans Saints. Next game on the list, the Jets, the J-E-T-S, Jets travel to Atlanta. Once again, Atlanta is just another disappointing year for the Atlanta Falcons. They get to turn things around. They will get a W at home against the Jets. But we can't put a lot of weight into this win against the Jets. Next on the list is the 0-4 Detroit Lions. And it's sad because this Detroit Lion is actually a 66-yard field goal away from actually being a 1-3 Detroit Lion. But and then turn around and lose to a Justin Field-less Chicago Bears team. But Minnesota, a couple of heartbreak losses this weekend or last weekend as well against the Cleveland Browns, who did not really put up great numbers, but the defense playing phenomenal caused Minnesota only be able to score 7 points to take that L. But at home against an 0-4 Detroit team, I have the Minnesota Vikings. Tampa Bay home at Miami. I think the Miami Dolphins are really rethinking what they did in this offseason, thinking that Tua was the answer. Really should went in a different direction in the quarterback position. Tampa Bay at home against Miami. Carolina at home against Philadelphia. Philadelphia not looking good at all. And things are going to continue to fall apart as well. And that quarterback situation, just really not the best situation for the Eagles. Carolina bounces back after their loss last weekend in Dallas to go 4-1 and continue to lead the NFC North. Tennessee at Jacksonville. Jacksonville continues their losing way. It was make that 20 straight losses since that 1-0 start. 24 straight losses at this point? Or no. Let's see. 15, 19. So, yeah, it'd be 20 straight losses. New England travels to Houston. Houston, that's a whole crapshoot. You just lost 40-0. Things are really unraveling in Houston. I think we're getting to a point that we're going to see Houston to start possibly take less for Deshaun Watson so you can salvage something this season and get something out of it versus paying him $10 million a year just to sit at home and do nothing. New England over the Houston Texans. Chicago travels to Las Vegas. Las Vegas bounces back from their loss to the Chargers to keep pace with the Chargers. Going 4-1. Speaking of those Chargers, as a matter of fact, Las Vegas will take top spot and stay pace with Denver because this is my upset of the week. I think Cleveland offensively clicks, finally gets things going, defensively plays lights out like they've been playing. I have Cleveland upset over the Chargers in Los Angeles. New York travels to Dallas. Great. Dallas gets to play another weak team, and then now we get to hear more MVP talk. We get to hear more Super Bowl talk about a team that is not going to have an MVP quarterback or a Super Bowl championship team. But I do have Dallas going 4-1 and beating the New York Giants. Arizona at home against the 49ers. They will continue their winning ways. making themselves 5-0 and knocking San Francisco down to a losing record, making them reevaluate the Jimmy G or Trey Lance situation. Kansas City at home against Buffalo. I have KC. I done told y'all all this talk in KC. And as this dynasty and everything, well, they're not a dynasty. You can't win one Super Bowl and be a dynasty. But this whole talk of Kansas City and have they fell off. They've not fell off. They will win at home and continue their winning ways. And by the end of the season, we're going to be talking about Kansas City, Cleveland, and the AFC Championship game. And forget that Kansas City started off the season 1-2, almost 0-3, a botched punt away from start the season off 0-3. And then the final game, Baltimore at home against Indianapolis. I have the Baltimore Ravens winning yet another game, running pace with the Cleveland Browns at 4-1, and continuing the streak as well, and potentially pissing off the Indianapolis Colts in doing so. Always a good time. Baltimore, you do you. Just don't do you against Cleveland. That's all I ask. Last things I want to get into before we get things wrapped up tonight, topic-wise, Bubba Wallace wins the race at Talladega this weekend, which has just caused a whole bit of controversy, but it's a whole to-do. Unfortunately for Bubba Wallace and those that are Bubba Wallace fans, most people will never get past the fake news, the fake racist thing that went on. That thing, that whole fake racist accusation will probably forever sit in people's mind, and how that has turned into sponsorship opportunities and a ride opportunity with Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan's racing over the 2311 X11, whatever the hell the team is called. To have people discredit a win because it's a rain-shortened victory, that's where I want to go, because I'm not going to change people's mind, nor my mind going to be changed on how things were handled, how NASCAR handled it, how making a false claim on what was ultimately a garage door handle to fit the narrative of what was going on to benefit and to basically take yourself out of what was probably going to be your last season at Richard Petty Motorsports due to lack of sponsorship and lack of backing, that turned into you being a different team because now you're fully sponsored because you used a false narrative to get yourself to where you're at. That's here nor there. But to have these people discredit a win, Jeff Gordon won 5 times on a rain-shortened race. Earnhardt's won a rain-shortened race. I think I saw Rusty Wallace had won 3 or 4 times. Darrell Waltrip won 2 or 3 times. Whatever the case may be, you can't discredit somebody shortened victory because you don't like the narrative or the narrative that he has carried to pursue or to continue his career. A win is a win, regardless how you look at it. Chris Buescher's win is a win, regardless how you look at it. There's a couple other drivers. I believe there's a driver this year, if I'm not mistaken, that either won on a rain shortened or got dark and had to cancel the end the race situation that nobody's batted an eye at. There's been multiple drivers that have won due to rain shortened races. There's a whole long laundry list of drivers, but nobody has discredited those drivers. I'm not going to discredit Bubba Wallace because at the end, winning a rain shortened race comes down to strategy and the willingness to take a risk of staying out when it could, at the end of the day, cost you a win, because instead of pitting with everybody else or potentially running out of gas in hopes to be out front when the race gets canceled, it is a whole call and a whole strategy within itself. So therefore, I'm not going to take away from their crew chief. I'm not going to take away from what that team did because it was a guesstimated opportunity that they jumped on. So to hear these people, it's a ring shortened win. It's not a real win. It's a real win. It goes in the book as a win. You got the trophy as a win. You got the points as a win. If he would have been in the playoffs, it would have been he wouldn't be into the next round. If it would have been early in the season, he would be in the playoffs win. It counts as a win regardless of how much you dislike or like Bubba Wallace. It was one of the first NASCAR drivers. As a matter of fact, I got to interview him Speedway parking lot after his win in the truck series at Kentucky. Gave me all the time in the world. Have the utmost respect for him and what he is willing to do for his fans. I don't have any respect for him necessarily due to the false narrative and how he didn't apologize or retract the false claims and has benefited from that. But I will not take the win away from him or discredit the win. A win is a win. Regardless if you won it on a ring short in a race, a strategy, missed a big one. Mike McDowell won a race earlier this year. He was the best driver. He avoided the big one. He had to be out front. It is what it is. We're going to just start discrediting people and how they won. If it does not fit the narrative that we feel that a NASCAR driver should fit and follow and determine which win is legit and what win is not legit. Let's get past this. This weekend, NASCAR had three first-time winners, first time in the three series, in the same weekend of the same track. First time it's ever happened. Congratulations to all the winners, regardless how they won the race. I think one of them was because of darkness, one was because of rain, and I forget how the third one won. I don't know if any of them actually legitimately went the full distance and won that way this weekend. I could care less. Nobody discredited the other drivers and the fact that one of them, I know one of them was short because of darkness. Nobody discredited them. I think it was Brandon that won that race, the one that was due to it being dark. Why Talladega doesn't have lights is beyond me. Here we are, 2021. All the tracks should have lights because of this possibility. But nobody discredited anybody else's win this weekend. As fans, we need to get above and beyond that BS. Let God sort out the narratives and the false claims and the ugliness. As fans, we need to just appreciate the fact that we got an opportunity to sit and watch a race. That there was even a race, even though it had to be ran on Monday, there was even a race this weekend. Don't forget, Thursday night, the Southern Dirt Track Report, 8 o'clock. You guys got a lot of stuff to cover for you guys this weekend. Monday night's right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. You got Race Chat Live. I'll be back in the studio next Tuesday night to recap Week 5 of the NFL and jump into some of these other topics that are going on in the sporting world. Never a dull moment as we get ready to wrap up the 2021 year in general, as we are here in October, and as we get closer and closer to bowl time, playoff time, NBA season, getting ready to roll, get rolling, a lot of things to jump into, so make sure you guys tune in next Tuesday night right here at the 110 Nation Sports Radio Sports Show. Until next time.